You are Locked On Ravens, your daily Baltimore Ravens podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And we return here with another episode of Locked On Ravens. I am your host, Kevin Ostreicher of Ravens Wire, and we return here on another Thursday episode of the 2021 offseason. The 2021 offseason starting just under a month ago, and it already feels pretty long just because there's been no football. There have been very minimal transactions across the league, but that is now just starting to change. We've gotten a bunch of cap casualties over the past couple of days, and a lot of them happening yesterday. And as the league gets closer and closer to free agency, we should start to see more and more of guys getting released by their teams, because with the way the cap is this offseason, it is lowered because of the revenue loss due to coronavirus. Teams just can't afford to keep some of the players that they maybe thought pre-coronavirus, pre-pandemic, they could have kept. So signing guys to big contracts, teams are trying to make money work elsewhere, to sign guys to extensions, to be players in free agency this offseason. So that means that they have to release some of their talented players, and some people across the league believe that the next week or so, there are going to be a massive amount of cuts. People have called it a massacre, which is pretty intense, but still, that just goes to show how aggressive teams could be to just get a couple of extra bucks to sign some guys in free agency this offseason. So I know we talked about some cap casualties yesterday in the form of Kyle Van Noy, for example, and how they could be fits in Baltimore. But I also want to talk about some of the guys who were cap casualties that we didn't discuss, guys who could help out particularly this offense. So we'll get to those guys in the second segment. But here in this first segment, I want to talk about some transaction news that happened with the Ravens yesterday, as the team agreed to bring back veteran defensive tackle Justin Ellis on a one-year, $1.2 million deal with $400,000 guaranteed. And so we'll talk about how this impacts the team, why they decided to bring back Ellis, and what it could mean for longtime star defensive tackle Brandon Williams, who has been at the center of a lot of controversy in terms of what his contract situation and his status in a Baltimore Ravens uniform could be during the 2021 season. So we'll talk about Justin Ellis and Brandon Williams in the first segment, some cap casualties who could help the Ravens in the second segment, and then in the final segment, we'll be continuing our mock drafts from Twitter that we got for Mock Draft Monday, but we weren't able to get to them on Mock Draft Monday. So just a quick round out of the lineup for today one more time. In the first segment, it'll be Justin Ellis and Brandon Williams. In the second segment, it will be cap casualties on offense who can help the Ravens. And then in the final segment, more of those mock drafts from Twitter. So with all that being said, let's jump right in here. But before we do that, be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, anywhere there's a podcast where they're waiting Monday through Friday at 6 a.m. Eastern Time. Also, be sure to follow us on Twitter at Locked On Ravens and my personal account at KOstreicher34 for any Ravens news, analysis, updates, historical perspectives, and much, much more. So with all that being said, let's get into this transaction news for the Ravens, with the Ravens bringing back Justin Ellis, the defensive tackle, 30 years old. He is back in Baltimore on a one-year, $1.2 million contract with about $400,000 guaranteed. And for me, this is a move that doesn't make a ton of sense. I mean, I do understand why they did it. He's a veteran. He's been in the system. He knows the system. He's good depth. It's not like Justin Ellis is this horrible football player. But to me, he did not have a great year in 2020. He had a good playoff game against the Tennessee Titans and had a few good spurts here and there. But to me, he doesn't really move a needle for me. I would rather have a guy like Broderick Washington, for example, in his second year on the field instead of Justin Ellis. And this is a depth signing, right? I'm not hating on Justin Ellis. I'm not saying Justin Ellis has no business being in Baltimore. He is a sound and good football player. But to me, I was expecting the Ravens to go in a different direction here. So obviously I was wrong. And again, predictions for all NFL analysts, all NFL media members, all NFL anybody, whether it be fans, even some of the teams, for example, right? They can never predict what happens during this 2021 offseason, during any NFL offseason. So for the Ravens bringing back Justin Ellis here, it's a fine move, right? It's meh, like 50-50. But for me, I don't think Justin Ellis moves a needle, and personally, The guaranteed money, I think, could be used somewhere else. Yes, it's only, quote-unquote, only $400,000. And I know in the NFL landscape, oh, $400,000 is nothing. But still, you could use that on another player, for example. And I don't know. I mean, I'm okay with the move. But at the same time, maybe I would have liked to see the Ravens use this money elsewhere. And this is pretty much a no harm, no foul signing. It's a move that gets the Ravens some depth in the event of an injury. Ellis is someone who combined for 17 tackles last season, no sacks. He's only accumulated half a sack throughout his entire career. Starting in 2014 with the Raiders, he spent the last two seasons in Baltimore. So it's a move to get a guy back in a Ravens uniform who is a veteran, has that veteran savvy, knows the system. But to me, now I need the Ravens to re-sign Derek Wolfe, because Derek Wolfe was productive both in the run and pass rush departments. Justin Ellis cannot rush the passer. When Justin Ellis was on the field in obvious pass rushing situations, it was not a pretty thing to watch. Justin Ellis had a good stretch of football in 2020. He also had a very bad stretch of football in 2020, where to me, he was almost unplayable, but the Ravens had to play him because there were so many injuries on the defensive line. But even in the extra playing time that Ellis got, he didn't do a lot of anything on the field. So to me, this move is a move that the Ravens definitely, I think, wanted to get done early just to have a camp body, someone who, if he has a great training camp, great. But if he doesn't, and someone else like an undrafted rookie or a late round draft pick comes into training camp and dominates, and Justin Ellis does not do that, then the Ravens can say, all right, we only guaranteed you $400,000. We're going to take this guy over you for the performance and just wish you the best. So it's a no harm, no foul signing to me. Again, I was expecting Ellis to move on. I was expecting the Ravens to move on, but it seems like he is well-liked in the Ravens locker room. He's a good guy, a very good guy, and the Ravens love to have a good culture in their locker room, and Ellis certainly contributes to that. So Justin Ellis coming back to the Baltimore Ravens here. But what does it mean for Brandon Williams, the Ravens defensive tackle, who is entering a year where he could be cut by Baltimore and could save the team around $7 to $8 million in cap space? For the Ravens, it's been a topic of discussion as to whether Williams will return to the Ravens in 2021. And to me, I think the answer is yes. Now, a lot of people are arguing against Williams returning to Baltimore because of the fact that simply he is not a three-down player. He does not provide a lot of interior pressure. He provides some, but not a lot, and I think less than the Ravens would like. He only has 6.5 sacks in his career. His last sack coming in 2019, he did not have a sack in 2020. His career high in sacks for a season is 2 back in 2015. But I mean, for the Ravens, we've seen what the run defense is without Brandon Williams, and it's safe to say that with the run defense, Brandon Williams doesn't make or break it, but he is very important to the team on defense. He's been in Baltimore since he was drafted in the third round of the 2013 draft, and he's been a staple on that defensive line, a beacon of consistency and providing high play for the Ravens. And no, he's not what he once was. I can admit that, and I'm sure a lot of other people can too. He turned 32 on February 21st, so he's also not a very young player as well. He's over the age of 30, which for defensive ends and defensive linemen, defensive tackles, it seems to be the age of kind of slowing down for most guys. Now, other guys don't slow down. You know, Calais Campbell, someone who still plays at a very high level at that age, and Brandon Williams is still playing at a very high level. I don't want to say Brandon Williams is an awful player, because he's not. He's still a very high-quality NFL player. But with the way that the NFL is working this offseason, with the way that the cap is going this offseason, it's not as high as a lot of teams thought. So now with the Ravens, do they want to shell out that $7 million that they could save for a guy who's only a two-down player, one-and-a-half-down player, or would you rather go out and find somebody who can rush the pass you can have out there for two downs, two-and-a-half downs, and you can sign that guy for $4 million or $4.5 million, and then you can use that other $3, $3.5, even $4 million to go out and sign someone else. Now, for me, Brandon Williams, I think, is too important to this football team to cut. I understand that he probably is not worth that $7 million. I get that, but at the end of the day, he knows the system, much like Justin Ellis does. And Brandon Williams is a much better player than Justin Ellis. You then look at Brandon Williams and what he's brought to the Baltimore community, the Baltimore team, a very good culture guy, just like Justin Ellis. So I don't really see the Ravens cutting Brandon Williams, in my opinion. I could certainly make a case for them to do so, but I don't think that case is strong enough to outweigh the potential negatives that come with cutting Williams. So I don't think this Justin Ellis news means much of anything for Brandon Williams. I think Williams is safe in Baltimore. It'll just be a matter of time to see if he actually is safe in Baltimore, because obviously my predictions are not always correct, and nobody's predictions are always correct. So with the way this NFL offseason, this 2021 offseason is going to go, we're in for a wild ride here. Ravens fans, Ravens media, everybody throughout the entire NFL is in for a wild ride here. So buckle up. It's just getting started for the Ravens and for the rest of the NFL. We're going to head into our first break now, but when we return, we're going to be talking about some recent cap casualties who could help the Ravens on offense. So stay tuned for that, and we'll be right back. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's now impossible to stock all the parts you need into a traditional chain storefront. Why endure from pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the counterman orders the parts on his computer, choosing only the brand his warehouse happens to carry? You have computers with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. Rockauto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to rockauto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in there, how'd you hear about us box, so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Rockauto.com. And we return here with our second segment of this Thursday edition of Locked On Ravens. Your host, Kevin Allstreicher, still talking with you here. And we just got into the Ravens news that they re-signed Justin Ellis to a one-year, $1.2 million contract with $400,000 guaranteed. And we talked a bit about the Brandon Williams situation. But now we're going to get into some recent cap casualties who could help Baltimore on the offensive side of the football. Now, over the past couple days, as I had mentioned earlier, there have been a plethora of guys who have been released by their now former teams because of the fact that with the salary cap the way that it is, teams are doing anything they can to get under the cap, to get a few extra dollars together for free agency this offseason. So some guys who are some solid contributors, or who have been some solid contributors over the past couple of years, are being released. So the first guy I want to talk about, we'll talk about a wide receiver and a couple tight ends. So let's first get into Golden Tate. Could he be helpful for the Baltimore Ravens? Now, Tate is 5'11", 191 pounds. He will turn 33 years old on August 2nd. And in 2020, he accumulated 35 receptions for 388 yards and two touchdowns, averaging 11.1 yards per catch. Now, Tate is someone who a lot of Ravens fans do not want on the team, and I happen to be in agreement. I don't think that Tate would move a needle for Baltimore. I don't even think he fills the receiver needs that Baltimore has right now. He's not a big-bodied receiver. Sure, he's good in certain contested catch situations. He also can be a pretty big over-the-middle-of-the-field type of guy. But the Ravens, I think, are going to give Devin Duvernay an opportunity out of the slot. They're going to play Marquise Brown there as well. I think they'll even give James Prochet some opportunities there. So where does Golden Tate fit? I don't think Baltimore wants to have a situation where they're going to sign Golden Tate. I think would effectively be another Willie Snead, who is effective but is taking away time from the young players who have put in the work. And for example, with Devin Duvernay and James Prochet, they've been in the system for a year. They didn't get a ton of opportunity in 2020 to showcase their talents. I think that was because they were almost redshirting under Willie Snead and under some of those other guys who were in the system for longer. But now they've been in the system and it's their turn. What the Ravens need is that physical, tall, fast X receiver who can be a boundary guy for them, contested catch winner, is able to get physical. That's a Corey Davis. That's a Marvin Jones. It's not Golden Tate. So for me, Golden Tate's a fine player. There's nothing against Golden Tate. He has certainly slowed down since his days in Seattle. But for me, I don't think Tate moves the needle. I don't think he fills a need at the wide receiver position. Baltimore has a need at wide receiver. I'm not saying that. But the type of receiver they need, Golden Tate is not that. So that's why I think that for the Ravens, they could go in a different direction. I've heard Marvin Jones's name be linked. I've heard Corey Davis linked as well. So those are guys who, again, fit that mold, fit that need. Golden Tate, in my opinion, does not do that. Then we have a couple of tight ends that could potentially help the Ravens, in my opinion. One being Kyle Rudolph. He's a veteran who has played his entire career with the Minnesota Vikings, although now that changes as he was cut by the team to free up some money. In 2020, he accumulated 28 receptions for 334 yards and one touchdown, averaging 11.9 yards per catch. Throughout his career, he has 663 receptions for 4,488 yards, 48 touchdowns for Kyle Rudolph, so he is a receiving threat. He also is an okay blocker. I've seen very, very mixed reviews on Kyle Rudolph's blocking ability. If I had to place judgment myself on Kyle Rudolph's blocking ability, I'm saying he's in the middle. I'm saying he's a 50-50 guy. And that's what the Ravens need because, in my opinion, Kyle Rudolph is not as big as a receiving threat as Mark Andrews. He's also not as good of a blocker as Nick Boyle. So he's in the middle, kind of what Hayden Hurst was for the Ravens. Now, obviously, Kyle Rudolph is not Hayden Hurst, and on the contrary, Hayden Hurst is not a Kyle Rudolph. But I think Rudolph fills a void for this team. The Ravens, I think, are going to want to go back to their three tight end sets a lot more than they did in 2020. And not having Nick Boyle there really hurt the ability for Baltimore to even run three tight end sets. They tried Luke Wilson. That experiment did not work. Eric Tomlinson is much more of a Nick Boyle in way of he is more of a blocker than a receiver. But again, I think the Ravens want to go back to those three tight end sets, and Kyle Rudolph could be a guy to be that third tight end in this system. Now, it does depend on the salary fit. Does he want to be a third tight end, or does he want to be in a more prominent role at this point in his career? I don't know, but I think that he could be a valuable addition to this Ravens team. And another tight end who was recently released, Jared Cook, formerly of the New Orleans Saints. Cook had 37 receptions for 504 yards, 7 touchdowns in 2020. He averaged 13.6 yards per catch. Now, Cook is a bit of an old guy in the NFL. He's been in the league for quite a while, starting his career in 2009 with the Tennessee Titans. He's then bounced around to the then St. Louis Rams, the Green Bay Packers, the Oakland Raiders when they were in Oakland, and finally here his stop in New Orleans, which was his most recent. So Cook will be turning 34 years old on April 7th, so a very veteran option for this team who could be almost a type of mentor for Mark Andrews and even for Nick Boyle, although I don't think Nick Boyle needs a ton of mentoring anymore. He's blossomed into a very, very good tight end. But for Cook, he's a receiving threat. Again, not the best blocker in the world, but can certainly do it if he's asked. Now, he is someone who is a lot better. He's more of a weapon than he is a blocker. So someone who's going to go out, catch some footballs for you. He does have a couple of issues with drops. Now we're not talking like Eric Ebron level issues with drops, but he's still someone who has struggled with drops a bit throughout his career. But he's someone who could, again, fill a third tight end void. You're not asking him to go out and catch 75 balls for 950 yards and 10 touchdowns. He is a very valuable red zone threat. He's 6'5", 254 pounds. He's physical. And again, just someone who fills a need for the Ravens because they do need more physical receivers. Mark Andrews, while he is a great contested catch guy, he's not as physical as I think a lot of people were anticipating him to be. So for the Ravens, Cook is someone who I think could help them. And then someone who was not even a cap casualty and someone who I've been talking about for the past year is Delanie Walker. Now, Walker did not get cut by the Tennessee Titans. He actually was out of football last season, but I'm talking about him because the news broke that he took off 2020 to get healthy and also because of COVID, but he is ready to suit up and play football again at the NFL level in 2021. And Delanie Walker has 504 receptions for 5,888 yards and 36 touchdowns in his career, averaging 11.7 yards per catch. He is someone who is the perfect fit in this Ravens offense. I still believe that, even if it is a year later from 2020. But I think that for Baltimore, he fills, again, that third tight end role. He has a connection with Greg Roman. He was with Greg Roman when Roman was the offensive coordinator in San Francisco during the years where Roman led the 49ers to the Super Bowl against the Baltimore Ravens in that 2012-2013 season. So for Walker, he's been out of football for a year. He's ready to come back. He's been working out, staying in shape. I am all aboard the Delanie Walker train once again, so he's not a cap casualty, but someone who could help this team. And as we look ahead here to the next couple of weeks, there are sure to be more cap casualties throughout the entire NFL. And that's something to look out for, because there could be guys who are hitting the free agency market who were not there originally, who could be absolutely perfect for this Baltimore team, whether it be on offense or on defense. So again, NFL free agency, it's going to be a doozy here in 2021. And over these next few weeks, we will see some more guys hit free agency because teams just cannot afford to keep them, or they don't want to keep them at their current salary. We're going to head into our final break now, but when we return, we'll be talking about some mock drafts that we received from Twitter. So stay tuned for that, and we'll be right back. Bet Online is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but the NBA, college basketball, and the NHL are in full swing. Bet Online even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. There are real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. Bet Online has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts. And we return here with our final segment of this Thursday edition of Locked On Ravens. Kevin Ostreicher, your host, still hanging out with you here. And we're now going to get into some more mock drafts that we received from Twitter for Mock Draft Monday. But again, we were not able to get to them all on Mock Draft Monday because we got such an amazing response. And again, Mock Draft Monday happens here on Locked On Ravens every single Monday. On Sunday, I post a mock draft for what I like to call Mock Draft Sunday on my personal Twitter at ChaosStriker34. I then retweet that tweet on the Locked On Ravens account. And under that quote tweet from Locked On Ravens, if you put your mock draft down below, I will get to it throughout that week on Locked On Ravens. So here today, we're going to be getting into some more mock drafts that we got for our Mock Draft Monday from this Monday, starting off with Austin Reno, who says, I feel like this would be a really good draft for the Ravens, despite the grades. It would address all the Ravens' needs, and I personally feel like Nico Collins has potential to be a good outside wide receiver for Lamar. So he did this mock draft on the Pro Football Focus mock draft simulator. He got a B- overall draft grade. With pick 27, he took Gregory Rousseau, the edge, out of Miami. At 58, he took Ben Cleveland, the guard, out of Georgia. Christian Upoff, the safety, out of Illinois State, is at 104. Nico Collins, wide receiver from Michigan, is at 131. Charles Snowden, the edge, out of Virginia, is at pick 169. At 184, Mikal Manette, the center, out of Penn State, is the selection. And at 211, Mustafa Johnson, the defensive lineman, out of Colorado, was the selection. So I do like this draft a lot. I think that Rousseau in Cleveland is a very good 1-2 punch there at 27 and 58, drafting a safety in the third round at the end of that third round with the compensatory pick of 104, I think would be another great selection. And then talking about Nico Collins, who Austin singled out, he's a guy who fits what the Ravens need at wide receiver. I think he could be a nice sleeper pick at 131 and then getting another edge at 169, and Snowden out of Virginia is a nice pick there. And then also just readdressing the offensive line against center at 184 and then a defensive lineman at 211, which again, with the Ravens re-signing Justin Ellis, how much of a need is that now? Do the Ravens move on from Brandon Williams? Do they not? So that's a sneaky underrated need I've been talking about for a while. But this draft doesn't go over the top with any specific need. Two edge players, two interior offensive linemen, one guy in the secondary, one wide receiver, and one defensive lineman. That's a pretty balanced draft. If I had to say anything, and if I had to maybe change one thing about this, maybe instead of taking a defensive lineman in the seventh round, I'd look for a backup slot corner. I've talked about Shakur Brown on this show. I've talked about Diamador Lenoir on this show. Maybe those guys, if they're available, but again, I don't know who was available in this draft. So this is a very nice draft here from Austin. There is nice talent at the top of this draft with Rousseau in Cleveland, some nice talent in the middle as well, and then some sleepers at the end of it. And so I think this is more of a B+, A- draft. Pro Football Focus has it at a B-, and I don't know. I think it's a little bit better than that. Obviously, no draft is going to be absolutely perfect. No draft that I do, no draft that anybody does. But for the Ravens, I think this fills a lot of needs. It's not overly reaching for anybody. And I think that they also get some nice sleepers in this draft as well. Our next draft here comes from Time to Fly My Guy, who has the Ravens trading around a lot, taking Jason Awe, the Penn State edge rusher, at pick 33, Richie Grant, the safety out of UCF, at pick 34, Carlos Basham, the edge out of Wake Forest, at pick 58, Dylan Reduns, the offensive tackle out of North Dakota State at 65. At 66, Kenneth Gainwell, the running back out of Memphis, was the selection. At 104, Dwayne Eskridge, the wide receiver out of Western Michigan, was the selection. At pick 131, Osa Odigizua, the defensive tackle out of UCLA, was the selection. Then at pick number 169, Kerry Vincent Jr., the corner out of LSU, was the pick. And then Tamarian Terry, the wide receiver out of Florida State, rounds out this draft at pick 184. And so this draft up and down, studs all around at positions of need. What I love about this draft is that they're trading out of the first round, the Ravens are in this mock, but they get value all across the board because sometimes if there's not a guy that a team likes in the late first round, if they find a team that loves a guy and they want to trade up 4, 5, 6, maybe even around 10 picks for that selection, a team in the later first round is willing to move back because it nets them extra draft capital, and someone who they like in the early second round is more likely to be available, and they'll take that risk while also acquiring later draft capital for a player who is most likely going to be available 10 picks later than when they're picking in the first round. So for the Ravens, getting an edge at 33 first, I like that a lot, and then also rounding out with 58 with Carlos Basham, another edge there, that's good for that position. I mean, if the Ravens want to go with that high-end talent at edge early in the draft, I would expect them to not attack it as hard in free agency, but the Ravens can only do so much planning like that before the draft because they don't know if the draft board is going to fall the way that this one did. In fact, a draft board is probably not going to fall the way anybody thinks it will come draft night and come draft weekend. So for the Ravens, a lot to be determined there, but if they do take two high-end edge players in the second round, I don't think that they're going to have a lot to spend in free agency on edge rushers. They might attack free agency somewhere else, and then they'll need to take some edge rushers like that. Richie Grant, one of the best safeties in college football last season, a great pick at 34, taking an offensive tackle at 65. I'm assuming the Orlando Brown Jr. trade here does go down. That's a good place to pick an offensive tackle, in my opinion. I don't like the Kenneth Gainwell pick. I'd rather have the Ravens take an interior offensive lineman at that selection instead, just because I don't think Baltimore needs another running back or another rookie running back young guy on this roster. I think they're going to either sign a veteran off of free agency or just go and keep the offense in the hands of J.K. Dobbins, Gus Edwards, and Justice Hill. I don't think they're going to draft somebody in this draft. I would hope they don't. Defensive tackle at 131, we've talked about that need before, and I really like the Ravens going after and attacking that position at least once in this draft. Kerry Vincent Jr. is someone I love. I haven't been able to snag him in any of my mock drafts that I've done so far, but I think that he would be a perfect fit on this Ravens defense with his versatility. And then Tamarian Terry is someone who is a sleeper in this draft and will be someone that the Ravens, I think, could really utilize in their offense, even if he doesn't fit all the boxes that the Ravens need at wide receiver right now. So overall, a very nice draft trading out of the first round here. I think that this would be a very nice outcome for the Ravens come draft weekend. Our final mock draft here today comes from Garrett Ferguson, who has the Ravens making a bunch of trades, trading up to pick number 18 to select Devonta Smith, the wide receiver out of Alabama. Then at pick 34, Joseph Osai, the edge out of Texas, is a selection. At pick 44, Javon Moehrig, the safety out of TCU, was the selection. At pick 49, Wyatt Davis, the interior offensive lineman out of Ohio State, was the selection. Shaka Toney, the edge out of Penn State, was the pick at 147. At 169, Caden Stearns, the safety out of Texas, was the pick. Alaric Jackson, the offensive tackle out of Iowa, was the pick at 184. And then finally, at 211, Josh Imatorbebe, the wide receiver out of Illinois, was the selection here. I'm going to start this one off by saying, how in the world did Garrett get this haul out of this draft? This is probably the best mock draft I've seen. I assume this has to do with the Ravens getting rid of Orlando Brown. If it doesn't, I'm even more impressed, to be honest. But between pick 49 and 147, the Ravens don't pick for around 100 picks, so I guess that could be the price of trading up and down and all around here. But the four of Devonta Smith, Joseph Osai, Javon Moehrig, and Wyatt Davis, I mean, just end the draft right there and hand the Ravens the Lombardi Trophy because they're winning a Super Bowl every year for the next 5 years with those four. I mean, absolutely unbelievable start to this draft. And then even getting into the later rounds here, Shaka Toney, I've talked about before, I like what he brings as a pass rusher. He has some room to grow as a run guy, a run defender, but he is a good pass rusher. Caden Stearns, some nice safety depth, although I don't think the Ravens take two safeties in this draft, and I think I'm more than happy with Trevon Moehrig if that is the case, and then maybe replacing Caden Stearns with a backup slot corner, a defensive tackle. Alaric Jackson is someone who I do like. I think he's more at his ceiling now, though. Taking a guy for me like a Landon Young or someone of that nature, I think, could be a better fit. And then Joshie Mutorbebe is someone who I think is a huge, huge sleeper out of Illinois, and getting him at 211 would be a steal. But I also don't think the Ravens take two wide receivers, and I certainly would take Devonta Smith over a guy like Joshie Mutorbebe. So I am impressed with this one. I think that's actually an understatement. I am more than impressed with this one. I still am looking for how this happened. I'm assuming maybe some draft picks in future years were given up. But again, the top four of Devonta Smith, Joseph Osai, Trevon Moehrig, and Wyatt Davis, what a haul for the Ravens those guys would be. They would make Baltimore a contender for years and years to come. That's all that I have for you today here on Locked On Ravens. When we get back here tomorrow, we'll be rounding out the week with more Ravens talk, so stay tuned for that, and I will see you tomorrow.